Hey guys, Brent will not be able to join me on the rundown this week, but he will be on the rest of the podcast, so stay tuned for that. This week on BTL, we have the triumphant, full circle, irony forward return of Sinkhole Radio. Trump makes a diplomatic visit to his autocratic dreamland where men can be men and women can walk a few steps behind said men. We have Jim Comey, American nut job. And does Mike Pence know anything or everything? In Trump's White House, is there a difference anymore? Plus, we've got Trump's budget cuts to everything you use, so a shadowy cabal of rich people can finally get a leg up. And in the words of Matt Taibbi, the Christopher Columbus of hate is dead. We'll have all this and more. This is Brain Trust Live.
Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another bi-coastal BTL, but we had another...
Bi-coastal. Coast to coast, man.
Coast to coast. We had another insane news week that begins with our favorite topic on Earth, which is sinkholes.
I mean, how were we so lucky? First off, everybody that we know sent us this.
Yeah, people get us.
As if we were... People get us, but also, like, guys... We got this.
Yeah, of course we heard about, like, the sinkhole outside Mar-a-Lago.
You can trust us. You can trust us on this one.
Yeah, so apparently in the world's greatest act of irony, a huge sinkhole opened up just outside of Mar-a-Lago. It's 4 feet by 4 feet.
Yes.
It's related to some sort of water main or something, according to the West Palm Beach utilities people. It's like the perfect... like metaphor for everything that's happened for Florida, for Trump, for America, it's a sinkhole just outside the Mar-a-Lago gates. Like it's like everything that you could hope for in a symbol.
That's right. The only thing that would have been more appropriate had the sinkhole actually just swallowed it the fuck up.
I know. Yeah, that would have been actually appropriate in that we would have actually gotten a good result. This is, like, so perfect because it is not causing any damage to Mar-a-Lago. It's just, like, a symbol of everything that's shitty about Mar-a-Lago and Florida is next to Mar-a-Lago causing no damage to anything. It's infuriating and yet hilarious. Right. And it lends itself so well to punchlines, but it doesn't actually affect anything, which is exactly what the Trump administration far is. My favorite line so far was from my own father, who said, well, maybe Florida's trying to drain the swamp. But Twitter...
Oh!
Ba-doom-tsh. But Twitter was like a... Twitter was on fire, because this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to Twitter, basically. So you should immediately... Yeah, after you've listened to this podcast, you should immediately check Twitter and find out what's new, because I'm sure there are 1,000 great punchlines that have come forward in the last few hours. But this is a story we're going to stay on top of. We're going to have every detail of Sinkhole Gate 2017 delivered via our social media channels to your door.
That's right.
As it happens.
We are the authorities on this. Do not think of going elsewhere for your Mar-a-Lago sinkhole news.
No, there's no one better prepared to report on a Florida sinkhole or a sinkhole of any locale than the BTL news team.
Right.
That's how we made our reputation, was on important sinkhole related breaking news.
That's it.
And we're not going to let you down this time. This is just like the perfect like combination of everything we love in one story. I can't believe things worked out this perfectly.
Right?
It's too much to be believed.
Until now, sinkholes had just been a random thing that we were obsessed with because they're ridiculous and terrifying, and, like, who doesn't love a good sinkhole?
Well, and
but we never really thought we were going to be gifted with a political sinkhole.
No,
before.
Of course not.
The thought never even crossed our mind.
We like sinkholes because we like stories about how terrifying nature is. We also like stories about tree snakes and other, you know, spiders falling from the sky and mysterious fish deaths and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But this is just the sort of pinnacle of everything for us. So we're going to stay on top of this, and now we're going to go on to the real news, but we're not going to let you down on...
Where we're going to talk about things that happen in foreign countries, which is a subject that we couldn't be less appropriate to tell you about.
Exactly. Well, and that's why we're not going to tell you very much.
You're going from
useful.
Our favorite topic to our least favorite topic.
I know, and yet
here we are. Donald Trump decided that he should leave the embarrassing confines. Like, he should leave the country of his creation.
Yeah.
And venture into other places where he can embarrass us in more dramatic ways. So, obviously...
Yes.
The first... Well, the best part of the trip is that awkward situation where Melania will not take his hand on the tarmac in Israel.
It's so good.
I mean, it's sort of...
It's so good, you guys. It's similar to the... It's, like, on a good level of, like, that clip from the inauguration where she is, like, standing behind him and has a scowl on her face, and then he turns around, and then she, like, smiles at him, like, you know, knowingly, and then he turns back around, and then she goes back to, like, scowling and looking like that she hates every second of her life.
She does.
It's, like, one of those moments.
Yes.
Also, if you haven't seen that clip,
right,
it's delicious. So just watch all of the times where Donald Trump makes Melania, like, feel disgusted by his presence, because it seems to be perhaps every moment that they're together.
It's most of the times that they're together. It has to be, by the way. He is disgusting, yeah, and it is very...
Who can blame her?
Exactly.
She knows. She gets
it. She gets it. She's no fool. So, in any case,
yeah,
Donald Trump, as we know, made his first stop in Saudi Arabia, where he was mostly there, I think, to just, like, sell them weapons and also sell them Ivanka Trump-related business opportunities, because that's really what he's there representing Trump Industries, first and foremost. But
that's
he
right.
did have time to catch part of an all-male concert in Saudi Arabia with Toby Keith, the country medium star, Toby Keith. He was performing with a Saudi performer, and he was on a stage lined with red, white, and blue and American flags. And Trump caught part of the show, and he and Melania did a, quote, slow roll past a live stream in a golf cart in the middle of it. Saudi Arabia...
That sounds like the way in Trump's defense, that is probably the way that I would also go to a Toby Keith concert. I wouldn't go. But if I had to at least act like
I had been there
in a way that, like, it's happening as part of, like, a foreign trip that I was on, I would also just quickly roll past it in a golf cart.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most time that I think I could handle being at a Toby Keith concert. Fortunately, this was an all-male concert, so I wouldn't have been invited, and I would never have been subjected to this horror. But... Saudi Arabia, in general, really lived up to Trump's expectations in a fantastic way. And they loved him, too. It was like the weird authoritarian, like, very misogynistic culture that he's always dreamed of. And he's, like, the bloviating idiot that, you know, that acts like he prints money, even though he doesn't, that they've always dreamed of.
Right.
And so they did a lot of
very
fantastical, you know, American flags places and lining things with billboards of his face and, you know, just the kind of thing that Donald Trump would respond to that's a meaningless gesture. They also served him well-done steak with ketchup because he's gross.
Yes.
It's a disgusting...
But, well, I think what, you know, a lot of everybody was talking about how, you know, Trump is going to, you know, he's making his first trip to all of the religious centers. And while, yes, that is true, because he's going to get to the Vatican at some point, and it maybe won't be quite as friendly there with the Pope, I don't know. But, like, what we also should remember is that the first two countries that he went to, which is Saudi Arabia, and then today, Monday, he's in Israel, are places who are very happy to see him as opposed to President Obama.
Correct. That's why he chose them as the first two spaces.
So that should not be lost on us.
No, he...
Exactly.
He went to... And he's the first president in a long time not to visit either Mexico or Canada first, and it's because those are two countries that would not have been happy to see him.
Right. They're not trying to look at him.
No, they're not trying to have to let him over the border. I wouldn't. He sounds like a horrible guest who demands disgusting well-done steak with ketchup. But... Hilariously...
Yeah. But both Saudi Arabia and... go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, hilariously, after Trump had been so harsh on Michelle Obama for not wearing a headscarf while in Saudi Arabia, I didn't notice Melania sporting one.
Well, she didn't have one.
No, of course she didn't have one. And I'm sure that if she had had one, he would have said it was giving into the terrorists or something crazy. I mean, I'm sure it's like there's no right way to be the Obamas, but there's also no right way to be a Trump wearing a headscarf. if your entire agenda is hate, is Islamophobia. Like, that's a right, tricky exactly. situation yes. he's yes. backed himself into. But don't worry, yep. he signed yep. a big defense deal with them. So we're selling them yes. A bunch of weapons, right? That's our ulterior motive there.
Yes, exactly. $110 billion with. And in classic Donald Trump fashion, really all he did was take the credit for something Jared Kushner got.
Yeah, that's his usual MO. And if there's one thing they need more of in the Middle East, yep. it's weapons. That's something it's that weapons. I say that all the time. They lack the weapons. That's yes. why things are falling apart.
That's right.
It's there's not enough weapons.
They do, yes.
But yeah. Saudi Arabia weren't huge fans of the Obamas. That was after years of their right. BFFs in the Bushes being in office. So they're happy to see a Republican face back in town, even if it's an idiot Republican face. And actually, I think that Trump is more sort of like their genre of leader than even the Bushes. So this has to have been like a fantastic time for them.
Oh yeah, for sure. They were really excited about him coming. They had billboards throughout Riyadh with his face on it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they were really stoked on this loser coming to visit them. So like, it's no surprise that he went there first, because I think that his people were like,
we need a win.
This is going to be like the friendliest place that we can get you to, and also it's the sort of tacky that you love. So it's going to be a really great time.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he probably fit right in. But then he headed yeah. on to Israel, where there's been slightly more tension, in part because he was giving away Israeli intelligence to the Russians as recently as last week.
Yeah, sure.
So, but of course, they have no yes. leverage, because what are they going to do? Tell us they don't need our money anymore? Like, they yeah. can talk a big game, but
yeah, they have to be nice. Smile and put on a good
exactly.
face.
Exactly. He apparently canceled a trip to Masada because he couldn't fly his helicopter there. That's like a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it's on a mountain in the Judean yeah. Desert, and you're not allowed to fly a helicopter there, and you're supposed to take a cable car up, like all respectable people, including Bill Clinton and George W. Bush.
Right, which is what past presidents of both parties have
exactly.
done.
Exactly. But not him. Anyway. He doesn't go anywhere that his helicopter nope. can't No, take exactly. him to, because he's too lazy.
But he did go to the Western Wall, and he was the first sitting president to do that.
That's true. Put on a yarmulke, too, and everything.
Yeah.
He did,
yeah. He was also the first sitting president to fly directly from Saudi Arabia to Israel. I don't know why we need to know that, but
but yeah, that was a widely reported fact that doesn't seem relevant at all.
Not at all. No.
Our two greatest allies in the region, in the worst possible sense, would be places you would fly between if you were visiting the region and you were afraid of everyone else.
Yes. But Trump did assure everyone during his press conference with Bibi that we're going to get a peace deal and it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah, well, it's going to be pretty easy.
He had laid out no plans. But that's because if we remember to the last time that he was with Netanyahu, he has all of the plans.
Yes.
Remember, he wasn't sure if it should be a two-state solution or a three-state solution or a 74-state right. solution or which states would even be involved.
He was open to any solution.
He didn't know what the term meant.
As long right, as it correct. Was a solution yeah. that he could take credit for.
Right, exactly. He's open to any solution that Jared Kushner can get to him immediately.
Exactly. Yeah, and as long yeah. as he can declare victory, it's going to be the right solution, too. It'll be the best solution if it's the one that he can have.
The best.
So we can be guaranteed of that, right. too. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. while he was gallivanting in Saudi Arabia and Israel, we had a successful North Korea missile launch. So while he was yeah. in one war-torn region, they were having their own trials and tribulations in yet another that we're involved in.
Yeah. And unlike the last one that we told you about, this one worked, so that's not great.
It's not ideal. It's not what you're looking for in a North Korean missile launch.
It was only a mid-range missile. They shot it, and it went out about 500 kilometers before landing in the sea. And while this type of missile could not reach the United States, it can still reach U.S. bases that are in the area. It could still obviously reach allies like South Korea. It could reach Japan. So it's not great. And it's also not great because they have really been testing missiles up a storm.
They really have.
We know that they've been doing it for years, just every once in a while, just sort of like as a provocation, and obviously just sort of like, you know, a bit of a warning sign to, like, you know, don't forget about us.
Yeah.
We're crazy and working
to
on
to keep the
program.
Imperialists
but, like,
on their toes.
They have really, right, exactly. But they have really been ratcheting up their testing, and also it's a little bit unnerving that at least some of these types of missiles have been working, because as we have told you on the podcast, it's always been the delivery system that has been
right.
the problem. They've got nuclear stuff just hanging out in the country. Like they're sitting on nukes that they could, you know, send to someone, but they just haven't had a way to send them. They do.
Good news. And moving from there to other good news, like the fact that this was one of the crazier weeks of Comey Russia revelation madness. They appointed a special prosecutor to oversee the Russia investigation, which was a surprise great thing. It's former FBI director Robert Mueller. He was appointed by the deputy attorney general, because obviously Monsieur Sessions is not allowed to participate in this decision. But
Not involved.
Rod Rosenstein is our deputy attorney general, and he said that his decision to appoint this special prosecutor is, quote, not a finding that crimes have been committed or that any prosecution is warranted. But basically, he said, based upon the unique circumstances, the public interest requires me to place this investigation under the authority of a person who exercises a degree of independence from the normal chain of command. Which is his... It was a remarkably real sentence coming out of the Justice Department for this day and age.
Right?
I was just...
Seriously.
At this point, I'm, like, shocked when I hear politicians or even people involved in government saying normal government things. Like, so much of our national conversation is wrapped up in, like, idiot blather. And that includes some professional politicians like Paul Ryan. You know, we're going to hear a story about him and Kevin McCarthy later in this podcast. Like, that includes some people who should know better.
Yeah.
But I feel like I rarely hear anyone say anything that it sounds like a professional politician would say. Or have, at least for the last 100 days.
It's like all the stupidity coming straight... It's like all the stupidity coming directly from the White House has, like, been contagious, like,
totally.
In a sort of upsetting way.
The White House didn't find out about this until about an hour before the announcement was made, during which Trump just repeated his claim that there was no collusion between his campaign and Russia. But everyone else was into the idea. Even Chuck Grassley was into the idea.
Yes.
So that's...
Right. That's how,
how you know,
guys.
He's not into many ideas other than recounting the times he's run into deers on various Iowan highway expeditions.
That's right. Yes.
Usually he's not up for good ideas, but he found it in himself this week because even the goons are getting a little bit nervous about this Russia stuff.
Seriously.
And rightfully
speaking of Iowa... Oh, sorry.
No,
Go ahead.
I was about to...
Speaking of Iowa really quickly, one thing that you won't be running into while you're in Iowa is a Planned Parenthood, which is upsetting.
Oh,
cause that
they got rid of... defunded Planned Parenthood this week.
Yeah, I think like a third of them like have already closed.
That's... And then this is concerning because Iowa is supposed to be sort of like a bellwether of like reasonable things. Like, I know they have crazy individual politicians in Iowa, but as a state, I feel like it generally doesn't, it's not at the forefront of doing ridiculous things like this. It was at the forefront of getting gay marriage passed, but it wasn't at the forefront of like Sam Brownback style shenanigans.
I was going to say, now they're at the forefront of being Kansas.
Yeah, I know. And that's not where you want to be. That's not a great thing.
Yeah.
But the reason that even Chuck Grassley could find it in himself to applaud the move to appoint a special prosecutor is because every moment new things are coming out about this Russia investigation that are concerning. And this week we found out that there is a current White House official who is now under investigation. They have not been named yet.
Oh, guys.
Yeah. But
yeah.
But it sounds exciting. I think that it's going to be one of his inner circle advisors, because I feel like there's no way Paul Manafort was so sketchily involved and Flynn was so sketchily involved and all these early adapters to the Trump thing were so sketchily involved and, like, Steve Bannon wasn't, you know? Like, I don't know that he was up to genius things because he doesn't know shit about politics, but I do feel like they're... Like, the early adapters to the Trump movement are the people that you should be looking at for this kind of thing, because there's no way so many of his advisors were indirectly affiliated with these people who were doing things they weren't supposed to be doing with Russia, and, like, no one knew anything and no one was involved. Right. That's not what happens in places.
No.
So
that's not logic.
So in a classic White House leak, a senior White House advisor described by the Post, the Washington Post, as someone, quote, close to the president, is reportedly a subject of investigation, according to several sources familiar with the investigation. And it's someone who we know is definitively not Flynn or Manafort. So this is a new and exciting guessing game that we get to play. But we didn't have a lot of time to play it because we spent all week having to hear fun gossip from the Comey-Trump dramas. It was...
Yes, exactly.
Every day something crazy happened. And every day it was something...
Oh, it was like bombshell after bombshell. And everything was being called a bombshell. And every time I read that word, I'm sort of like, oh God, another bombshell. And then you read what it is and you're like, well, I guess that is technically a bombshell.
I know. Yeah, all of them are legitimate bombshells. That's what's so shocking about all of it. And they're all kind of... It's speeding up in a way that's kind of concerning. You know, last week we heard a lot of people saying Watergate. This week I heard a lot of people saying... This is literally out of Watergate. Like, last week, the whole situation felt vaguely Watergate-y. This week, people were pointing to me individual times that it felt like Watergate in specific ways. So, I feel like...
Well, and this next story that we're going to tell you is, like, also specifically about Watergate. Because we remember Watergate. Yeah. I mean, we don't remember, we weren't there. But, I mean, the reason that sort of Watergate was a thing was that Richard Nixon was trying to get an investigation into him stopped.
Yeah. Right.
And what we found out this week is that is exactly what Trump was trying to do, not necessarily about him, but in regards to Michael Flynn, which ultimately is obviously tied to him. So I'm sure he was obviously concerned about it coming back to him. But we found out that there was a memo that James Comey took where Trump told Comey to drop the whole Flynn thing.
Yeah, they make it a practice to try to make memos about important conversations in the FBI so that they don't forget things.
Yeah, that's not out of the ordinary, because there were some Republicans who were like, why is there a memo about that?
There's a memo about everything.
Find something that is so shocking and horrifying, somebody tells you, you usually write it down officially.
When you're
everybody knows that it actually got said.
When you're the organization that's responsible for... investigating as a bureau, this is the kind of practice you get into. But Comey took a memo after having a conversation with Trump in which he said, I hope you can let this go regarding the Russia investigation. And this is something that came out this week, immediately triggered claims from a lot of people that Trump was guilty of obstructing justice. And this was the bombshell that I heard the word impeachment most often tossed in with. And I'm skeptical at this point of anyone saying impeachment, because so many impeachable things feel like they've happened and yet nothing has happened. But I do feel like this is a specifically illegal thing to do in a way that a lot of the other things haven't been specific. So this is something I think it's obvious what happened here. I think Trump has no idea what he's doing, and he called him because he thought, this is what I do in business. I make these things go away. I call the New York Post and I tell them, don't do this or I'll threaten you with blah, 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 and they do it. I call the New York Post and tell them that I'm a ladies' man and they print it. You know, like, this is how his life works. So I'm sure that he didn't even realize he was obstructing justice by doing this. But this is this is something
that... He thought, I'm the president. You work for me.
Yeah.
You should, fucking do what I tell
you. Exactly. But this is an extreme issue, not just because, not just for Democrats who are concerned about obstruction of justice, but also for Republican allies who don't want to be associated with Nixonian practices. That was a shameful moment in their history, and I don't think that they're eager to go back to it. So I think Comey, according to sources, was appalled by the request. And so that's why he documented it, obviously. It was during an Oval Office meeting. He was very concerned that the president was trying to obstruct justice in a direct way. And so he wrote a bunch of memos about this. But I feel like it, first of all, it seems like there's going to be more of these leaks, because there's probably more memos, because I can't imagine that was the only time that this was said, or that was the only time this was implied. But this, along with all of the circumstances surrounding his sudden firing, are leaving other GOP officials on the Hill in a real awkward situation. But the word impeachment is sort of getting tossed around more and more. I don't, think that we're at a point where impeachment proceedings are going to start, but there's going to be a point where it's not advantageous to stick up for him anymore. And at that point, if he's broken the law or not,
well, and
Well,
I think there's already some stories about, Republicans aren't necessarily there on impeachment yet, but there have been a lot of stories that I've read this last week that are sort of like, behind the scenes, the GOP is sort of like talking amongst themselves as to how much longer they can sort of like let this go on, not necessarily to impeach him, but just politically, how much longer can they sort of like be on Team Trump, just to save their own asses now at this point, sort of. So I think it's going to be more popular to see people speak out against him. I don't know that you're necessarily going to see a bunch of Republicans rush to get, impeachment going in the House, but I think that they're going to make it a lot harder for Trump to sort of like be relevant, I think. Well, and we saw sort of already this last week, Jason Chaffetz, who's the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, who granted probably can do whatever he wants because he's leaving in June. We told you he was like not going to run for re-election, but now he's like just like, bye guys, I'm out.
Yeah, he's going to spend time with his family host a Fox show.
Yeah. Host a Fox News show. Yeah, exactly. But he sent a letter to the FBI asking for a handover of, quote, all memoranda, notes, summaries, and recordings referring or relating to any communications between Comey and the president. That's not a great sign.
No, his lack of beholdenness is really problematic for them at this moment, because his lack of curiosity about this was part of what was keeping all of this under wraps. And even though there's a chance that he's asking for this information so that they can try to discredit it, or that, it's all going to be from Comey's side, because none of the White House memos are going to say anything incriminating about the president, obviously. I think there's, the move to transparency, even if he's doing it to be a sketch, is he's sort of beyond, retribution at this point, because he's leaving office early to go be a Fox News host, and who cares what he's up to. I think that is going to be an accidentally problematic thing for the Trumpers, because it means that they suddenly don't have control over the information like they used to anymore, and they already had such a tenuous grasp on it. But also,
I was going to say they hardly have control of anything.
Exactly. And Comey is now supposed to testify in an open hearing before the Senate Intelligence Committee after Labor Day at some point. So,
Or Memorial Day.
Memorial Day,
the one who wrote Labor Day.
Yeah, I read that off the doc as you wrote it. It is after Memorial Day. Labor Day is not for months, and that would be useless information, because who knows what's happening after Labor Day.
Wrong.
No, but after Memorial Day, that's soon, because Memorial Day is in like a week.
Well, you're not wearing white.
No, exactly. No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't at a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, because it's too boring for that. But there's going to be an open hearing with Comey.
But
so
you know what? We shouldn't worry about what he's going to say in front of that Senate Intelligence hearing anyway, because he's just a nutjob.
Yeah, that's
that James Comey.
The most accurate word that a president who should have a vocabulary.
We shouldn't believe anything that he says. He's just a
can use.
Yeah, he's just a nutjob.
Yeah, just just your simple, average nut job. That is, according to Donald Trump, the best adjective to describe James Comey. He said that at a meeting with Russian government officials last week. That was the same one where he was telling them classified info.
The one where he was...
Yeah.
That
meeting. He had just fired him, and the Times reports that he felt, that he should use a a complicated adjective like nut job to describe the man who he used to have as the head of his FBI, and also who basically yeah. accidentally colluded with him in order to make him the president. Right. And
right.
it's the hearing it in Trump cadence is really kind of like a special thing, because this is, again, the president of the yeah. United States. And according to the documents that were released about this meeting, he said, "I just fired the head of the FBI. He was crazy, a real nut job. I faced great pressure because of Russia. That's taken off." So, A, I don't think he fully...
Yeah, that's done. I fired the head yeah. of the FBI, so the Russia investigation's
yeah,
over.
Yeah, that's what you do. Is if you fire the head of the FBI, no investigation can continue. They have to start new ones now. That's...
Yeah, right.
The document was read to Times reporters by a U.S. official. It was confirmed by a second official. Sean Spicer did not dispute it or the accuracy of the document. So this is a real thing that he did. So also, Flynn, speaking of Russia investigations, is also supposed to be working with the Senate Intelligence Committee, like Comey is planning to in the next few months. But yep. he's decided... as of recently, that he's just going to plead the fifth, because that's not suspicious at all.
Nope.
He's
not, and this was in response to some documents that they subpoenaed from yeah. him, actually. And his attorney said, quote, "Producing documents that fall within the subpoena's broad scope would be a testimonial act, insofar as it would confirm or deny the existence of such documents."
So they exist.
So they're asking for documents, and like, right, exactly.
So that means they exist. Also, shouldn't some of these things be matters of public record? Like, can you
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, can he just say that he's not going to do this? I mean...
Right. Like, I don't feel like you can plead the fifth against, like, a matter of, like, you know, treason with records of your interactions right. with public officials as a member of the White House staff. That's, I mean, unless they're asking for document for his, like, report cards, I feel like they're...
Well, right, exactly.
Yeah. His lawyer's letter to the Intelligence Committee's chairman says that Flynn is, quote, "the target of on a near-daily basis of outrageous allegations often attributed to anonymous sources in Congress or elsewhere in the United States government, which, however fanciful on their face and unsubstantiated by evidence, feed the escalating public frenzy against him." First of all... Is it that he... Can he not provide the documents because then the evidence might be substantiated? Like, the only reason I can think that you might not be able to provide these documents is because they substantiate the evidence that is leading to this escalating public frenzy. I feel like right? pleading the fifth in this situation is just pleading guilty. It's just, like, a way to plead guilty in yes. a less respectable manner. Meanwhile...
Yeah. Well, it's not surprising that he's doing this, because remember when all of this went down with him the first time, he was asking for immunity.
Right.
Which he didn't get.
He's like, so he's a wimp.
Right?
He's such a wimp.
Yeah.
It's like a squirrely little
this
wimp.
This was actually sort of my, right. This next story was actually sort of like one of my favorite
oh my God.
Stories of
I fell down a rabbit hole of this.
In the whole sort of like. Right, exactly. In the sort of like, you know, in the entire sort of like Russia narrative. And I feel like people were maybe not focused on this as they should have been. But that's because, like we said, you know, there's seven bombshells every day. Yeah. But one of the things that we learned last week is that it sounds for all the world. And this also is another thing that's not shocking, but I'm glad we have potential proof of it, that Mike Pence has been lying this whole fucking time about what he knew or didn't know about Mike Flynn and his ties to Russia.
Yeah, the real question of the week is, who is Mike Pence? What is he doing? Why doesn't he know literally anything about what's going on in the White House? I.e., does he know literally everything and they're trying to keep him clean because they know Trump's going down, or they know some other horrible thing is going to happen? Because every single time one of these stories breaks, he's like, oh, I didn't know about it. Oh, I didn't find out about it until March. Oh, I never heard about him. I never heard about any of the things. These are things, a lot of the things that he, quote, never heard about were things that were disclosed to the campaign on record at a time that he was the head of the transition. Right. So at the time that he was basically
yes, they were things during that
in charge of vetting this information. you know, things about Mike Flynn's lobbying for Turkey, which was unauthorized, things about his conversations with Russian officials. You know, Mike Pence claimed that he had not been told about the content of the, there were sanction discussions that happened around Christmas with Russian officials.
Yes.
And he had not been, you know, he claimed he hadn't been told about that. The decision to fire James Comey, he claims that he had no idea this was all going to happen, even though it seems highly unlikely that any of these things could have happened without his knowledge. So either he's literally the most incompetent person on the planet, or he's lying.
Right.
And I feel like with Trump...
Exactly. It's a little... Specifically, the thing that I think is the most questionable of all of these things is that we found out last week, and this is sort of like what got everybody talking about, like, wait a minute, Mike Pence, like, might you be lying about everything? The specific thing was the one in regards to that Flynn revealed to the transition team that he
the
was
turkey.
Under federal investigation.
Oh, the federal,
which Pence said, and that's what it was in regards to. And Pence stated all the way up until March that he had no idea. So he either was, one, lying about that, or two, was the most incompetent head of a transition team ever. Neither of which are good, but one is certainly worse.
Yeah. I guess this is sort of like an escalating issue. You know, after the situation with Flynn talking to Kislyak about sanctions, there was this widely reported conversation where we found out that Flynn had been lobbying for Turkey and was being paid to do that. Pence says he was unaware that Flynn was working as a lobbyist for Turkey while working on the Trump campaign. But he was serving as the chairman of the Trump transition team when Elijah Cummings, who's the head of the House Oversight Committee, sent him a letter warning about this very thing. So either he's, you know,
on November
18th. So Cummings said, you know, either he's lying or he's, quote, running a sloppy shop. Flynn claims he didn't know anything about this until March. Then there's the, you know, the Flynn probe tip-off. Then, you know, he claims that he doesn't know that Flynn was under investigation related to his work with Turkey. Again, he's the chairman of the transition team at the time, but not only that, Flynn briefed the White House counsel on this investigation on January 4th. Flynn's lawyers provided more information to the transition lawyers on January 6th. The White House account is denying this, but only anonymously. But Pence is saying he didn't know about this until March. Or, you know, that it's documented that he was the head of the transition team, while it's also documented that Flynn's lawyers were providing this information to the transition team in January, and somehow Pence doesn't know anything about it. And then he also claims he gave a completely wrong account of the Comey firing to CNN, claiming that it had nothing to do with the, you know, the Russia situation and the Trump administration trying to hide, you know, trying to punt that investigation. But Trump, Trump was well aware that he had been planning to push Comey out. Pence says that he was not aware of this, but it seems almost impossible considering that everyone, you know, that plenty of leaks have confirmed that Trump was venting to everyone about hating Comey and to his small circle, which includes Pence, that he wanted to get rid of him. So it seems...
Correct.
Highly suspect that any of these things could have happened without him knowing anything. So it makes it feel like there is a larger conspiracy afoot that is designed to keep Pence clean, but also it's not even a well-designed conspiracy because all of these things seem too outlandishly ridiculous to be true. And, you know, like, we're only 120 days in, and we can already put together the number of things that he claims he knew nothing about is so staggering that either he's basically not doing his job, or he's lying to all of us, both of which are terrible. This man cannot be the president.
Yes. No. And maybe he won't be.
Well, I do think that this is making it, you know, there's an obvious, you know, I think that it's likely that there's an attempt to keep him clean. So that if Trump gets taken down, there's a fall guy.
And I think people are seeing the writing on the wall, too. We don't have the story pulled, but there were reports last week that he started a PAC last week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that. Oh, yeah, I forgot. We should have added
that. What is the sitting vice president doing starting a PAC? And it's probably because he assumes
he's the one running.
Going to be running for either his first election or potentially a re-election in 2020 if he becomes the president. So, like, I think that, you know... maybe he did literally know nothing about this because he has been trying to stay out of the disaster of it all, knowing that he might be left holding the bag. But, like, that seems a little far-fetched.
I just don't see a world in which his hands can be completely clean if all of this is going on.
No, I agree.
And I think it's foolish of him to think that that is what he should aspire to. You know, I think you get in bed with Donald Trump, he takes everyone down with him. He does not leave anyone standing. Because if he leaves people standing, then he didn't win. So I don't see a world in which Pence can fully claim ignorance of all of these things unless he's willing to claim ignorance of his job. In which case, he should not be the president, because he apparently doesn't know what the job entails or what the vice president's job entails or what anything entails. Yeah. You know, I think that there's a concern in either case here. There's no good outcome here for him. So, like, don't ever get in bed with Donald Trump.
Now, now, let's just say, hypothetically, Donald Trump gets impeached. Mm-hmm. Mike Pence either gets impeached or can't take off or whatever. I don't even know how that works. Do you impeach the vice president at the same time?
No.
Like, who knows? The next person who would be in line would be Paul Ryan, which isn't great. None of the options are great. Like,
well, as my mom says, our best option is Orrin Hatch. That's a terrible situation to be in.
Yeah, exactly. And Orrin Hatch is after Paul Ryan. And we heard a story last week about Paul Ryan that makes you think that maybe we could get to Orrin Hatch.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Because last week, Washington Post reported that there was a recording of a Republican conference meeting last summer at a congressional GOP meeting, and Kevin McCarthy can be heard saying, "There's two people I think Putin pays, Rohrabacher and Trump, swear to God." And Ryan, Paul Ryan, quickly interjects and says, "No leaks. This is how we know we're a real family here."
Whoa.
Yikes, guys. And what's even more yikes about it is that spokespeople for both the speaker and the majority leader denied that the conversation had ever occurred until the Post informed them that it, in fact, had a recording of it, and at which point then Paul Ryan's spokesperson said that
it was a joke.
McCarthy was just joking.
It's just a joke. It's just,
it was a real laugh
riot. It was locker room humor.
It was a hilarious joke about who's on Vladimir Putin's payroll in the United States government.
With an ominous threat that nobody should leak this information about who's committing treason because we're a family. You say that in the mob.
Yeah.
You can't say that in Congress.
Yes, exactly.
My favorite part about all of this is that there's like a Republican conspiracy to claim that Evan McMullen is responsible for this, which... couldn't be more beside the point, but also maybe he is, in which case, good on him. On Friday morning...
Well, right. I mean, there were only so few people there, and he sort of, like, would be... Of the people who were there, like, he would make the most sense as, like, an actual Republican.
He's not in the meeting. In office. He was the policy director at the House Republican Conference, and he was in attendance, but he... I refuse to believe he's the only Republican that is, he's the only one that ran for president by trying to attack, you know, Trump politics. But I don't think he could possibly...
He ran for president in Utah.
He was the president of Utah in the last election.
Yeah.
But I don't believe he's the only Republican in Congress right now that feels uncomfortable with what's happening with this Russia stuff. This is everything that Republicans are supposed to be against. They are by nature still stuck in the Cold War.
Was Justin Amash there? Because he hates Trump, and he mentioned impeachment last week.
Exactly.
So I mean, like,
I think the blaming of Evan McMullen is an attempt to deflect it from sitting Congress people so that they don't have a discussion about infight in Congress. And maybe it was him, but I also would believe it's not. I would believe it's literally anybody except Kevin McCarthy, who's from California, so we can feel embarrassed about that, and Paul Ryan, who's from America, so we should feel embarrassed about that, who are both known idiot people. That conversation, I read this transcript a couple times and I was like, ugh, another one of these leaks. Fine. And then the more I read it, the more I was like, no, this is suspicious. Like, this is not, yes. It got more incendiary to me the more times I read it. Because at first I was like, oh, Kevin McCarthy trying to throw some shade on a fellow congressman and whatever, you know, like whatever. And then I was like, but this, this response from Paul Ryan is dark. It's.
That's where it is. Yes.
Yeah. It's not what you want.
Right.
Another thing.
No, it's not.
That you don't want is Joe Sleepy Face Lieberman to be the head of the FBI, but his treachery will never end, will it? He's going to be with us for the long haul. We will never get rid of Joe Lieberman.
It's endless. That's correct.
He lost us the 2000 election. He is continuing he lost himself his own seat. He continues, he's lost every party he's ever belonged to. Continues to have the sleepiest face in politics. And now, Trump, oddly, wants him to be the FBI director. And I cannot for the life of me figure this out. They apparently had a meeting and he liked him. First of all, Joe Lieberman cannot be that likable. he seems so boring. But on top of his lack of likability, I mean, he has a similar lack of loyalty to anything in particular, to Donald Trump, so maybe that appealed to Trump about him. But he's just sort of like, he's like...
They're both former Democrats.
That's true. Maybe he felt comfortable because he shares his confusion about his own politics. But there are so many confusing questions about this. I have so many questions about why Joe Lieberman would agree to participate in an administration that has been overtly anti-Semitic repeatedly. I mean, I have questions about the Kushners also, but they're, like, in the family. I just, like, there are so many, like, I can't figure out why any Jewish person would agree to be involved in this administration, including an idiot.
I know, right?
Including Joe Sleepyface Lieberman, because this is, like, his connection to his faith is really the only thing he has. His, you know, politics are built around this identity. This would be such a confusing thing for him to do in a world in which he's done nothing but confusing things. Like, but to me, this feels like such a I don't even understand why he'd agreed to meet with Trump. Is he feeling that irrelevant? That he just needed to
That's what I was going to say. Like, to a lesser degree, Joe Lieberman has always been somebody who has been sort of like obsessed with not necessarily the spotlight, but obsessed with like staying relevant. It's why he sort of was like, I think, loved being like always on the fence of like being a moderate,
right?
Because it like gave him all of the power, because it's sort of like we had to make sure Joe Lieberman was happy with something before we like decided to vote on it in the Senate. And it's just sort of like, fuck whether Joe Lieberman is happy or not. But, like, I think that it's sort of, like, it fits in line with that sort of side of Joe Lieberman in that, like...
Are we searching for glory in the wrong places?
More of...
That's...
Correct. Exactly.
That's kind of his life. That's the Lieberman ethos.
Yep.
I just... This...
The Lieberman way.
This story does nothing but confound me and confuse me in a way that even some of, like, we have, like, literal treason going on here, and this is still the most confusing news story of the week to me. Because I just, like, want to understand, and I want to understand why Trump is interested in this. I want to understand why Lieberman is interested in this. I want to understand how anyone got through a conversation with Joe Lieberman and thought, this guy seems like a good guy to have around, or why you would have that conversation with Trump. I guess to some degree they're both vain idiots, so I guess there's that. But the saga of Joe Lieberman just never ceases to amaze. It's one
what an awful
zinger after monster. Another. Meanwhile,
oh boy.
Speaking of monsters, Trump is about to release his first full budget tomorrow. And it's going to be...
Probably smart that he did it while he was on his first foreign trip.
Yeah, because it's going to be filled with mostly horrible things that nobody wants. And horrible things that most of nobody wants. Like, not horrible things that only Democrats don't want. This is horrible things that, like, nobody wants. These are not...
Right, that Senate Republicans don't want.
He's using the term welfare reform, which I would contend is a dangerous word to use at this point, not only because the last people who attempted it were Clintons, and so to associate yourself with a word that the Clintons last used is dangerous, but also because it's been tremendously unpopular every time that they've done it. Reagan did it, the Clintons did it.
Yes.
Everyone who's demonized poor people has come out looking like an ass and has ultimately, in the long run, been shown to have been an ass. Like, there's just... It's like he's just recycling political terminology from the 80s because he hasn't paid attention to anything since then. It's like his brain stopped working then. But this budget, we're not even going to go through everything that it cuts because it cuts everything. The only thing that it doesn't cut is military spending.
Defense.
But it does cut taxes for rich people. So if you're a rich person, you are in luck. Because we are going to get rid of pesky programs like food stamps so that you can have your promised tax cuts. So don't worry about a thing. This is going to be tough to even pass in a Republican Congress. And because it's going to require Republicans to go on the record voting against some things that you can't easily vote against even if you hate them. Like, you can vote for a program that makes food stamps more efficient by privatizing it to blah, you know, like you can vote for a program that sounds like it's doing something positive for food stamps, but is actually cutting them.
Yeah.
But you can't vote for a program that just gets rid of funding for things like food stamps. That's actually cruel and inhumane.
No.
And the dirty secret to all of these social welfare programs is that a majority of people that use them are white and poor, and a lot of them vote Republican. A lot of Trump voters use these programs. Like, any time that we try to demonize people of color for using social welfare programs, we should remember that whether or not, you know, Republicans like to talk about disproportionate numbers of people of color using these programs, a majority of people that receive welfare benefits in this country are white. A majority of people that receive any benefits in this country are white because a majority of people in this country are white. And that and because of that, a majority of poor people in this country are white. Like, these are programs that cut the benefits to the very communities that voted for Trump out of desperation. They will not they might, you know, they might get you reelected once by people who are just angry at everything. They will not get you reelected a second time. If you are in Congress, your term is 2-year limited if you vote for something like this. Because this is a bad look on anybody. And especially, I mean, in the states that vote for these kinds of, you know, vote for Republicans. I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. They don't care. Maybe they don't care about cuts to the EPA or community block grants or things like that. But
they are going
to care about the very little in money or benefits that come to them disappearing because we had to give tax cuts to the Waltons, you know? It just doesn't...
Right, exactly.
But oddly, his plan does have $25 billion to give parents 6 weeks of paid leave after the birth or adoption of a child. Ivanka Trump is so weird. Everything about her
priorities,
involvement in this situation is weird. The whole country is weird. I don't understand. I'm whatever. We just talked about Lieberman. Nothing that makes sense is going on. But I love it. Also, is going to include $200 billion in infrastructure spending to encourage. But I love this. That's to encourage state and local governments to boost their own spending. So we should remind everyone that people know that state and local governments are also using our tax dollars. Like, it's the same tax dollars.
Tax dollars.
It's still our money. Like, it's not like just because we give tax cuts at the federal level that if we punt those costs to the state that we're not paying for them. We're still paying for them. Like.
Right. And newsflash, none of the states have any money.
Mm-mm.
By the way, I mean, California.
The
does.
Only states that have less, money are the states hearts, that are funding the states that don't have any money. The only states that have money are the states that want these programs, that want this money. So it's a curious situation that we're in. But this is probably going to partially, at least, you know, it's partially going to go the way of this healthcare bill debacle because there's too many landmines in it. but the GOP hasn't even sent...
Which is still a debacle even after it's been passed. Guys, if you didn't know
that. But the GOP has not sent it to the Senate yet because they can't. They have to wait and see if it meets the CBO requirements before it can be passed as a budget reconciliation bill, which means that they rushed to vote on it to avoid the CBO score coming out, but they're probably going to have to vote on it again if it requires literally any changes, because in order for the Senate to be able to pass it with a simple majority, it has to meet some specific requirements, and in order to know if those requirements are being met, they need a CBO score. So it's even sillier than you could have possibly imagined. Paul Ryan on Friday confirmed...
Yeah. And they knew that this was going to be a problem even before... Because part of the reason why it took them so long to get a deal done with Freedom Caucus was because a lot of the things that the Freedom Caucus were asking for were things that were going to cause this to not be able to be voted on as just a straight up budget bill. So like it obviously didn't shock them because they haven't passed the bill along. So they knew exactly what they were doing. But I mean, like, this... The whole CBO thing and the budget reconciliation thing is like has long been a problem with this bill. So it's shocking to me that it's like they rushed to vote on it and now might have to vote on it again.
Yeah. And this means that they're going to repeatedly have to put a vote on a bill that is going to, at the time that they vote for it, we're going to know that it's going to rip like 24 million people off their insurance. Like, this means they're going to have to continue to go on the record supporting that policy. This is a terrible idea. Like, they couldn't have gone about this a worse way. And part of it is that, so in order to meet the budget reconciliation requirements, it has to reduce the deficit by at least $2 billion over the next decade. They have no idea if it's going to do that without a CBO score. And the original bill did meet that requirement and all of the other requirements. But when they changed the provision that would allow states to opt out of the requirements that plans carry a minimum package of benefits, and also that plans charge the same price regardless of whether people have pre-existing condition coverage or conditions or not, they threw it into disarray. So those horrible, terrible policies are the reason that they're going to have to wait and find out whether or not this bill kicks even more people off of their insurance. They're thinking that if states opt out of the Obamacare requirements, more people, like the real issue that they have to wait is because if the states opt out of the Obamacare requirements, more people might be able to afford coverage because it will be cheaper. It won't cover anything, but it will be cheaper. And because of that, they will have to give tax benefits to all of those people. So they were really saving money because 24 million people were going to not have coverage. And so they weren't going to have to give tax benefits to those people because they weren't going to have any coverage. But they might have to give tax benefits to more people by cutting the requirements that the plans cover anything, because then the plans will be affordable and people will actually try to buy them. It's like the saddest drama.
Yeah, and this latest plan also allots like a boatload of money, and probably ultimately not enough, but it devotes it gives a lot of money to states who opt out of the pre-existing conditions to basically help fund the, you know, the high risk pools
that they're going to have to put these people in. That's going to be extremely expensive.
Yeah, so that is another thing that makes it potentially not cut anything from the budget, because they've had to allot all of this new money to that.
Yeah, the genius of the Freedom Caucus amendments to this bill is that they've made it tremendously more expensive. It's everything and nothing.
Which is hilarious because they hate government spending, supposedly.
Yeah, that's the whole reason they want to get rid of Obamacare, because it's overreach. You know how overreachy it is, so that people can have health care. I hate when the government helps people get health care, and then we don't have sick people wandering the streets with no coverage going into bankruptcy because they needed a toe set or something.
Yeah.
It's a toe set. It's a horrifying world to live in. Yeah. You know, when you break your toe and then you got to set it. That's an expensive procedure without insurance coverage.
I'm sure.
I was literally just talking to a friend of mine who just had a baby about what she had coverage on this, but what the original cost of, she had a baby and the baby was, quote, tongue-tied, which is when the thing that connects your tongue to your jaw is like, you know, that ligament or whatever it is slightly too long, and it makes it hard to stick your tongue out. And so they have to get it snipped or something. The procedure to get it snipped literally involves a doctor taking scissors to it and quickly snipping it. But it cost $2,500.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's madness. So in any case, moving on, we have some interesting news from the Supreme Court, which was hearing some North Carolina related news this week. And this is actually not the first North Carolina law that it's had to hear in the last few weeks, but they ruled that there were two congressional districts in North Carolina that were drawn illegally to specifically concentrate black voters in one area and diminish their political clout.
Yeah. So they got to redraw two districts in North Carolina. Love it.
They got to redraw two districts in North Carolina. And it's interesting because in one case, the ruling was unanimous. In the other case of the other district, the ruling was split 5-3. Three conservatives dissented, but Clarence Thomas ruled with the majority. It was wild. Clarence Thomas found a heart somewhere voting on what the NAACP was calling apartheid voting districts. That was...
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, I thought a pretty genius thing. In North Carolina, there are 13 congressional districts, 10 are Republican-held, and 3 are Democrats. But basically what they had done was try to pack white Republican voters into districts of their own so that they could outnumber Democrats in those districts, and then they packed all of the black voters into two districts so that they could just have, like, two... You know, those two districts would definitely be Democratic, but they could still outnumber.
Right.
Because as you recall, I mean, North Carolina is a swing state, essentially. They have a Democratic governor. They almost went for Clinton in the presidential race. This is not a state that should have 10 out of 13 districts Republican in the House. It doesn't make sense. So in any case, we'll be interested to see how that proceeds. There was another redistricting case on March 1st in Virginia, which was along similar lines, where they were trying to essentially suppress the clout of black voters there. And then it was also not a good week for the North Carolina GOP, because the week before they had gotten rid of there was a plan to revive a big voter ID law in North Carolina, and they rebuffed that. Specifically designed to discriminate against black voters, which apparently North Carolina is a hobby of the GOP there. Now that we've been stripping the Voting Rights Act, it's because the only time you're allowed to consider race as a factor in drawing a congressional district is if it's to comply with the Voting Rights Act. And what the Republicans there claimed for these two North Carolina districts was that one was drawn on purely partisan grounds to benefit Republicans. That's actually not illegal. But the other was drawn to comply with the Voting Rights Act. These are wild claims, because also I would contend that probably in North Carolina, there is no way to draw your districts according to partisan aims and not have them be along racial lines. I would contend that it is probably very unlikely that there is a way for them to only draw districts on the basis of partisan aims and not have race be a factor in that decision. But what do I know? I'm not from North Carolina. In any case, I thought it was interesting that they tried to claim, they were like, no, we just drew these districts so that only Republicans would win them. That's legal. We just couldn't consider the race of the voters in the districts while doing that. It's bonkers. In exciting news, that Montana House special election is tomorrow. That's for Ryan Zinke seat, our new interior secretary. But that's the one with our Montana folk singer, Rob Quist.
That's right. Bernie Sanders endorsed. He went to go do a couple events with him there recently. And he just announced that they raised a boatload of money.
Yeah.
$5 million, which is insane for a Montana House seat. And it's insane for a House seat, honestly. But I mean, like...
Yeah. But it's in Montana, they only have one House seat. So this is a bigger race than the Senate race there in certain ways. But they got more than 200,000 contributions in 85 days. I would love to know the population of Montana, because I bet that is, compared to the population, is a sizable chunk of people. I'm sure many of them were out of state, but I'm just curious. Just curious to see what that. But he's running in part on the basis of his experience going into major debt after a medical emergency. So he's running partially against these attempts to curtail our healthcare, you know, access. Yeah, and
love that.
This is a state that Trump carried by 20 points. But so I'm kind of interested to see what happens. It would be a big deal if he even came close, because it would be yet another example of a left-wing populist message resonating in communities that are staunchly Republican. And that's something that hopefully the more times that that happens, the DNC will sort of be forced to take notice, because it will be the only effective way to win races. But, you know, you never know if they're going to pull it out of the hat or not. But so his opponent has raised $3.3 million, which is still a huge number for a congressional race. But it's interesting that in Montana, the Democrat would be leading the funding pack. So we will keep an eye on that for sure. Race. And then Chelsea Manning was released this week.
Yes.
It has finally came. Look. Yeah. Has a new look, very coiffed. You know, she was forced to cut her hair to conform to the requirements of the men's prison that she was in. And that was a big point of contention with her lawyer since the summer. She posted a picture, and then she posted a picture of her feet in Chuck Taylor's, saying "First Steps of Freedom." And then, you know, street clothing.
Yep.
It was
very exciting.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting to consider the effect of all of this in the aftermath of it, because one of the, you know, Chelsea Manning was convicted on espionage charges and, you know, giving information to WikiLeaks, or in the Espionage Act, giving information to WikiLeaks. But one of the ways in which Chelsea Manning has been really groundbreaking is in terms of getting service members access to transgender healthcare benefits, because she went on a hunger strike in 2013 to demand access to treatment and ultimately got it. So she now has access through the military, because she's officially on unpaid active duty status because she hasn't been court-martialed. So she technically has access to all of her military medical benefits. But so she currently has access to those things now, you know, now that she's out. She could get gender reassignment surgery. She can get treatment for her gender dysmorphia, dysphoria. I mean, but her lawyer has said that she wants to live life free of government, reach. And so has decided to take care of her own health benefits. But it's interesting because in the aftermath of this, it's the big influence here has largely been on the discussion about transgender health and transgender rights in a way that I don't think I would have seen coming when Bradley Manning was sentenced to 35 years in prison.
Right?
I mean, that's the real, you know, thing that we took away from all of this, which is, it's interesting. And it's at least it was a way to kind of lend a more largely productive, you know, use to her imprisonment, because otherwise it was just like a huge sore on, you know, our reputation as a country with any sort of freedoms. It hadn't occurred to me that that was kind of like the real legacy here. I was kind of like, oh, that is not what I thought was going to happen here, but here we are.
Certainly not.
Another thing that I didn't think was going to happen soon enough was Roger Ailes dying. It was so refreshing to not have to pretend that he was a great human being because...
Right? I loved that. That was my... I was texting you about it last week because, like, he died and, like, I was like, oh, God, here comes at least the next 12 hours of, like... calling him a titan of industry.
Yeah, like we had to with Scalia.
There were certainly the outlets that did that. Like, let's not kid ourselves. Like, they existed. But just sort of, I read so many. First off, Twitter was, like, full of one-liners, like, in an epic sort of way. But there were also, like, a lot of, like, think pieces, if you will, that basically sort of, like, tied Roger Ailes rightly to sort of, like, the shitty place that this country is in now. The reason that we all... hate each other, the reasons why Republicans and Democrats can't work together, the reason why we consume news as entertainment. I mean, like, all of these terrible, terrible, terrible things can be traced at least in some part directly to Roger Ailes.
Yeah. And Matt Taibbi had one of the best think pieces on that. That
God,
included
what a dream he is anyway.
Such genius as Ailes was the Christopher Columbus of hate. He called Laura Ingraham one of an endless succession of blow-dried shrieking dingbats.
All true.
He leaned heavily on the sort of dystopia image of, that Ailes helped create in part because in commodifying news the way he did, he also, he also created a need for the left to kind of encamp to their own news. And now the left watches MSNBC, which is essentially making money the way Fox News is making money by, promoting one kind of news over another and, isn't unbiased or fact-based news for the most part. It's just like a lot of shrieking pundits. But it's kind of fascinating how well he kind of like distilled all of that into some great one-liners. And he ended it with, "Enjoy the next life, you monster," which I...
Right, and even leading into the "Enjoy the next life, you monster," like the whole left.
Oh yeah, that whole You should read that whole.
He says the extent to which we hate and fear each other now, that's not any one person's fault. But no one person was more at fault than Roger Ailes. This is good. He never had a soul to sell, so he sold ours. It may take 50 years or a century for us to recover. Even dictators rarely have that kind of impact. Enjoy the next life, you monster.
Yeah,
and he's absolutely. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's we've like the hole that Roger Ailes helped in large part dig for us is some deep shit, guys.
Yeah. No, it's a situation, but it was interesting to apparently there is a depth past which you don't have to pretend a dead person was great.
Was great, yes.
Apparently there is a limit to that.
I'm happy to learn that it was Roger Ailes.
Yeah, I feel good about that as well. That fills me with a kind of joy that maybe makes me a little bit of a sociopath, but I don't think I care.
Nope. Yeah. Nor do I.
Exactly. In any case, that's the news this week. We will be back next week with more news. Hopefully fewer bombshells, but you can never know these days. And we will we'll probably be a day late next week, too, because it's Memorial Day weekend. But we will be on top of it, and we will keep you in the loop about this Mar-a-Lago sinkhole as facts continue to pour in.
Tell your friends if they're looking for sinkhole news.
That's right. We're your number one source. So we'll talk to you next week.
That's right.
Bye.
Bye.